Good morning. I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 9:15 a.m. on Monday, May 17th, 2021. Present in the room today are Representative Thompson, Representative LeBon, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This morning we will look to the will of the committee on Senate Bill 27 and hear Senate Bill 101, Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas by the Senate Resources Committee. Beginning with Senate Bill 27, Industrial Hemp Program by Senator Hughes, the committee considered and moved the companion legislation House Bill 156 by Representative Hopkins on May 4th. These bills are identical, and communications with offices illustrated we could move this version without hearing it as it is identical. Do I hear any opposition? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, do you have a motion?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate Bill 27, version 32-LS0249, /I, from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 27 has moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign paperwork. Thank you.
Good work.
House Finance back on the record. Next, we have Senate Bill 101 by the Senate Resources Committee, carried by Senator Rivak. the Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas. Senator, if you would please place yourself on the record and begin your introduction.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Merrick and members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, Senator Josh Reback representing District M. Thank you so much for hearing Senate Bill 101 today. It extends the sunset date of the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Management Areas in Alaska, or commonly referred to as CACFA, for another 8 years to June 30th, 2029, which was the recommendation of Ms. Curtis, the auditor. CACFA was first established in 1981, shortly after Congress passed ANILCA, which governs all federal lands in Alaska, and adding in the Alaska Statehood Act and the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, most Alaskans are regulated under extremely unique and complex legislative web. CACFA's mission is helping Alaskans navigate these complex rules and regulations and working with federal agencies to ensure the congressional intent of ANCSA and ANILCA in our Statehood Act is implemented. As institutional memory and expertise is lost, CACFA serves as a vigilant and knowledgeable resource for Alaskans to defend the land access rights and protections they were promised in federal law. The commission helps individual Alaskans navigate federal permitting, is a resource for Alaskans wanting information on their access rights under ANILCA, and considers, researches, and holds hearings on the consistency with federal laws of management, development, and additions to federal land. Madam Co-Chair, the Senate Finance Committee introduced a committee substitute to SB 101 that requires that three of the governor's appointees to the commission be representatives of a corporation formed under ANCSA, or of corporations formed under ANCSA. Because ANCSA corporations are also large landholders in the state and frequently handle federal land access and subsistence issues, incorporating their perspective into the commission's considerations will be very beneficial to the commission's work. The Senate Finance Committee also restored funding to the commission in one full-time position to reestablish staff support for CACFA. Again, I appreciate the committee hearing this bill, and we're here for any questions. We also have Ms. Curtis, the auditor, here with us.
Thank you, and I apologize, I didn't recognize at 9:17 a.m. we were joined by Representative Edgman. Are there questions for Senator Reback?
Yes.
Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, good morning, Senator. How did the commission function the last, I guess, few years without staff?
Representative Josephson, Co-Chair Merrick, they had volunteered for these positions to do what they did. And when they did have a full-time staff, it was an executive director who largely, the job of the executive director was to compile the great work that they did. So it was a critical role, but while they were not funded, they were acting as volunteers. Most of the folks on the commission, I would add, are really passionate about the issues.
Thank you. And I think we will bring Ms. Curtis up.
I have a question.
Would you like to have the question before the auditor goes over the
Yeah, just a quick, easy question.
Okay, Representative Wolf.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This says three of the appointees need to be members of ANCSA. How many appointees are there?
There are 12 appointees, six appointed by, I'm sorry, Representative Wolf, Co-Chair Merrick. There are 12 appointees, six appointed by the legislature and six by the governor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Ms. Curtis is our legislative auditor. She will place herself on the record and begin your testimony.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, state legislative auditor. So I believe you all have a copy of the audit of the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas, which we refer to as CACFA. It's dated April of 2020. Just as a reminder, the purpose of a sunset audit is to determine whether a board or commission is serving the public's interest and whether it should be extended. I may be starting on page one, which is the background information section of the audit. Now, CACFA is responsible for identifying and reducing potential negative impacts from federal actions on any of the over 200 million acres of federal land in the state. The commission was active from 81 until 1999, at which point the funding was eliminated, and then it was reestablished in 2007 and was active from FY08 through FY17, at which point, again, the funding was eliminated. The federal management of land in Alaska has been widely criticized Concerns with federal overreach and unfulfilled commitments led to the reestablishment of CACFA. The commission was reestablished to advocate on behalf of Alaskan citizens on issues related to federal management of Alaskan land. Report conclusions start on page 7. I want to point out that the prior sunset audit is dated 2015, so this sunset audit looks at February 2015 through June of 2017. The audit found that beginning in FY17, funding CACFA has not been a priority of the legislature or the governor. However, both entities have attempted to fund the commission at different times during the last several years. While not a consistent priority, again, they have both tried to fund it. Then there was vetoes. And so overall, though, the audit concluded that from the date of the prior sunset through June of 2017, the commission operated effectively and did not significantly duplicate the activities of other entities. The audit also concluded that there is a continuing public need for this commission, and we are recommending an 8-year extension. We found that while CACFA was active, the executive director monitored the Federal Register for new information related to CACFA's mission. He provided comments on proposed changes and brought relevant information to the commission's attention. If determined necessary, the commission would write a comment letter to the applicable federal agency. Comment letters formally summarized CACFA's concerns with proposed management plans and changes to regulations and laws. The commission sent 14 comment letters and testified 4 times from the period February 2015 through August of 2016. So the commission was very active. The letters and testimony were directed to federal agencies and congressional subcommittees. Additionally, CACFA invited federal agencies to present information and discuss federal plans and policies via panel discussions to help facilitate communication between the public, state, and federal agencies. These meetings generally lasted from 1 to 2 days and included multiple presentations from individuals representing federal agencies such as the U.S. National Park Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and Bureau of Land Management, and state agencies such as Department of Natural Resources and Department of Fish and Game. We do not make any recommendations, and the response to the audit can be found on page 21. Department of Natural Resources Commissioner concurs with the recommended 8-year extension.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Representative Josephson.
So, through the chair, Ms. Curtis, I'm going to ask you something. It's going to sound a little provocative, and but I think it's important just to sort of illustrate a point. You said that the audit concluded that this was in the public interest. And I don't foresee this happening in my lifetime, the legislature had a commission that defended the federal government's interests in management of federal lands and protecting intact ecosystems for visitor industry and wildlife viewing. Would your office conclude that that must be in the public interest because the legislature had passed such a law?
Through the chair. I would first look to the legislature and the governor and ask them, do you think this is in the public interest? That's what we did in this case. There was no commission at the time we did this audit. We had to find commission members. All of the commission members have actually rolled off. There is no active commission members because it's been defunded. So we were struggling with, well, how do we figure out that exact question? How do you figure out whether this commission's operating in the public interest? So we looked to, well, why was it created in the first place? Are those concerns still valid right now? Federal overreach, unfulfilled commitments, that type of thing. Are they still valid? Yes. We looked at, what does the governor's office think? We sent a letter to the governor, said, do you care about this commission? Do you want to see this commission? Do you think it's still needed? And we got a response back from the Commissioner of Natural Resources saying yes. And then subsequently, within a week, their amended budget included funding for the commission in FY21. And it ultimately wasn't improved, but so they thought that there was a need for it. And so looking at, then we look at, okay, how did they operate? Were they active? Did they successfully work towards achieving their mission? Yes, yes, yes. So we're like, oh, okay. You know, even though they're not funded, they haven't been funded, We're going to recommend that they continue to exist and give the legislature an opportunity to fund them in the future.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. First of all, I'm glad to hear of all of that due diligence, and it supports your findings, I would say, for sure. But my sense is that your answer to my question would be yes, that if there was evidence that the people of Alaska were interested in protecting, for example, the federal government's right to manage land it holds title to, because that was in the American interest, and for some bizarre reason, we supported that.
Mm-hmm.
You would do the same sort of vetting and might reach a conclusion that the commission to support intact ecosystems was in the state interest.
Through the chair, if the legislature had gone through the public policy process of passing legislation, and it was our job to then come around and see whether it should sunset, I would follow the same process. Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. You explained that the commission was funded due to concerns of federal overreach and so on. Why was it defunded in the past? Why did they say, hey, we don't need this anymore?
Through the chair, that's a legislative decision not to fund it. So they actually did try to fund it in FY17, and the governor vetoed it. So in 18 and 19, it wasn't included in the proposed operating budget, the governor's budget, or the legislature budget. The legislature passed funding in FY20, and it was again vetoed. It was in the governor's amended budget in 21, but never ended up in the final operating bill. So that's why we said, well, while it hasn't been a priority, that's how we, you know, used our words to communicate that, it hasn't been a consistent priority for either the legislature or the governor. They have both shown their interest in funding it over the past 5 years.
Follow up?
Yeah, I guess I'm looking at this report. It says it was active from 81 to 99, at which time the funding was eliminated. And then it said Alaska reestablished CAFCA in 2007. CAFCA operated from 08 through 17 when funding was again eliminated. So twice, for long periods of time, it was eliminated. And I didn't follow the legislature. I don't know why they did it, but you did the audit. So is there any indication as to why they just said, you know, from 99 to 07, so 8 years, and then 17 it was defunded, and then just recently you said it was in the budget of a couple years ago, I guess.
Right, through the chair, the funding veto in 17, I'm going to presume, was not a budgetary priority in looking at all the things that need to be funded. So, yeah, it is true. It was, and it was established back in 81 as a temporary agency.
Okay. Last follow-up.
Follow-up.
Thank you. on this fiscal note, it says travel $5,000 and services $6,800, but in the 2016, travel was $34,000 and services were $77,000, more than a factor of 10 on the services. Is that in line? I mean, are those numbers, were they just bloated in 2016?
through the chair. It's my understanding, I haven't looked at the fiscal note in detail, but back in 2016, they actually had more than one staff person. They had a executive director and a part-time natural resource staff person. They had active projects going on. So the fiscal note, I don't know what it's envisioning, but it looks like a pretty bare bones type of thing, like just get it going type of deal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let the record reflect at 9:34 a.m. we were joined by Representative Ortiz. Next, we'll go to Co-Chair Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regarding the funding, we had actually put in the funding on the House side back in FY20, and then that was, of course, vetoed out. And I think part of it may have been Donna Ardwin was also here, and everything was being cut. Everything was being vetoed at the time. So I had asked the governor why he vetoed, and he said, well, if the administration, the Trump administration, he thought that they're going to get a lot more cooperation. I don't know. I, I mean, I didn't have an in-depth discussion with him on that, but that was something he mentioned. But I told him, I said, you know, my constituents, you know, are very interested in having this. The chairman of CAC at the time, and I believe he might still be the chairman, even though folks aren't being paid, or at least until recently, he was the chairperson, and I've spoken with him a lot about that. He's from Nome, and so I've gotten to understand what this does more. I know that in my district, we've got a lot of folks who want greater access to places like through the National Park on the Seward Peninsula. There's a lot of trails that go through the park because, you know, it was mining area back in the day, and so there are a lot of trails that are old tractor trails that would be grandfathered in, and I know, like, folks, you know, would love to be able to go from Nome to Deering through the park on a four-wheeler if they follow the trail, or to Serpentine Hot Springs, which you can really only get to by airplane for the most part, unless you're willing to walk in, and it's quite a ways to get in, and so that means that, you know, folks who are well off are the only ones who really get to go there, unless you're with the Park Service and you're going to, you know, do work at the springs to, you know, maintain the buildings and so forth. So I'll be getting a lot of feedback from folks in my district about wanting to support this, and so I'm going to support it. We had, I believe it might have been Representative Edgman's office who organized an ANILCA training two or three years ago. Was that?
Senator Geisel's office.
Oh, Senator, okay, Senator Geisel's office, and that was in Anchorage when that was done. And the thing that I took away from that was it was very complex. The, you know, just this whole system of, like, if there is an old trail that was grandfathered and it's an RS-2477, trying to get that to the point where the public can access that, it was super complex. And so in the sponsor statement here, Senator Rivack's sponsor statement, you know, it just talks a little bit about as institutional memory and expertise is lost, and then it goes on to say various things. Federal managers have little incentive to uphold Congress's promise to Alaskans, but the key part there being as institutional memory and expertise is lost, and that's the part that I worry about, and so I just want to make that statement. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I actually would align myself with many of the comments Rep. Foster just had, but I would just say that to some of the question, it would be interesting to see, and I don't know if the sponsor's office has any background information on this, but to see kind of a parallel between the prior administrations at the federal level and the legislative action on this board, because it seems that when we have an administration that's more willing to work with Alaska on our state's rights, access to land as one issue, that we may not have the same level of concern about protecting it through this commission. But clearly within the first 100 days of the Biden administration, we've seen a lot of our state's rights kind of under attack. So it does seem very important to me that we move this, and I think funding it is also really important, and I can't imagine that this administration at the state level would veto funding for protecting the state's rights at this point.
Thank you. Seeing nothing further, thank you, Ms. Curtis. We will move to our next invited testimony. Tina Cunning, specialist on the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, ANILCA. Ms. Cunning, welcome to House Finance. Please place yourself on the record and begin your testimony. Ms. Cunning, are you perhaps on mute?
Thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you very much.
My name is Tina Cunning. I worked in the state's ANILCA program from its beginning in 1981 until 2010, nearly 30 years in the implementation of ANILCA. Since then, I am part of a team that conducts ANILCA training. The governor and legislature, along with many Alaskans, worked hard during the ANILCA deliberations in Congress to protect economic and social opportunities for the relatively new state. This partnership included businesses, miners, fishermen, Alaska conservationists, the newly formed ANCSA corporations, rural communities, and landowners. The results of this hard work are reflected in the unique provisions in the final bipartisan passage of ANILCA in 1980 that protects the Alaska lifestyle and future uses of federal lands. In 1981, the legislature passed legislation to establish CACFA so that Alaskans could be kept informed as the Alaska Lands Act was being implemented and to protect uses of those public lands as Congress envisioned in ANILCA. While the state's ANILCA program worked hard at protecting the state agency responsibilities, CACFA was invaluable throughout my tenure as volunteer Alaskans in helping individuals work through the new federal requirements for commercial service permits, such as for air taxi operators, sled dog tours, hiking guides, access across the conservation units to inholdings, and cabins for subsistence. It has been 40 years since passage of ANILCA, and many people in government and among the public have forgotten the special provisions for public uses that the governor, legislature, ANCSA corporations, and Senator Stevens fought so hard for in the final bill. As a result, CACFA is needed now more than ever. For example, earlier this year, one of the federal agencies published draft access regulations that would change the process required for acquiring permits to access non-federal lands. The proposed process directly impacts all adjacent landowners and inholders, of which there are nearly 20 million acres of inholdings in Alaska. These changes impact the ability of the state, the ANCSA corporations, the municipalities, and hundreds of individual Alaskans to use their non-federal lands. Without CACFA providing information, most of the affected landowners were not made aware of the conflict between these proposed federal changes in the regulations and the ANILCA process that Congress adopted that is already in regulation for Alaska. Most Alaskans do not read the Federal Register every morning with their coffee, but that is exactly what the CACFA executive director did in order to watch for actions that may impact ANILCA's implementation. Someone who wants to make money in rural Alaska, such as renting their snow machine or tour guiding on federal lands, now has no one to help them navigate the red tape or appeal decisions if a federal land manager simply says no. The legislature and governor were wise in establishing this citizen forum to help Alaskans meet their social and economic needs that were promised in the final bill Congress adopted. Every passing year without CACFA results in lost opportunities for individual Alaskans, and conflicts over uses go unresolved. I strongly support reauthorization of this independent commission for the benefit of all Alaskans in their management of federal lands as Congress intended in ANILCA. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cunning. That was very interesting information. I see no questions. We appreciate you being here today. With that, we will move to public testimony. I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 101. I see no one in the room to testify, but we have two people online. First, with the Alaska Outdoor Council Policy Director in Palmer is Rod Arno. Mr. Arno, welcome back to House Finance. Please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chairman Merrick. My name is Rod Arno, Palmer, Alaska, and I'm the Policy Advisor for the Alaska Outdoor Council. The Alaska Outdoor Council is fully supportive of the reauthorization of CACFA. Personally, I was a commissioner on CACFA from 2008 till 17. And in my experience as the executive director of the Outdoor Council, as well as a commissioner on CACFA, I see the extreme importance for CACFA to continue going to help individual Alaskans have the access to the federal public lands and resources on those. Considering that 18 million acres of ANCSA land is within the conservation system units created by ANILCA, it seems extremely proper to go ahead and have half of the governor's appointments to CACFA be shareholders or from the corporations of ANCSA, because they have almost half of their lands within those inholdings, and access to those is extremely important. So without taking up any more of your time, I appreciate the committee looking at this bill and hope that they pass it out of committee so we can get CACFA up and running this year. thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Arno. We appreciate you calling in. Our next testifier from Kenai is Christine Hutchinson. Ms. Hutchinson, please state your name, affiliation, and begin your testimony.
Good morning, committee. Thank you for taking up this bill. My name is Christine Hutchinson, and I'm a private person on the Kenai Peninsula representing myself. I am a new person to this paying attention and providing constant vigilance on what's happening in our government. And I've been a long time been concerned about the fact that Alaska has not gotten what it was entitled to in statehood in many different ways. And I believe this is part of it. But I believe citizens need to be constantly vigilant to watch what their government is doing, and this is one way where we can do that. As was stated previously, Alaska is, it seems like Alaska is treated differently by this presidential administration, and therefore the interest is raised anew on this committee. But I'm very anxious to see this committee raised back up with some funding to get it started. And I noticed on the existing commissioners that the Kenai Peninsula is not represented at all, and therefore my interest is heightened. So I am looking forward to the committee passing this out with the fiscal note so the vehicle can provide for the citizens' constant vigilance. I know that it is part of your oath in your position to defend the Constitution and safeguard my rights, and I believe this is one vehicle where you can do that. I appreciate your time. I support a yes vote, as is, with the fiscal note passed on to the next committee, hopefully the floor. In any case, have a great day, and thank you for taking my testimony.
Thank you. You have a great day as well, and it's nice to hear that you're becoming engaged with the government process. It's nice to hear from folks. I see no questions, and I see no one else in the room or online to testify. So with that, I will close public testimony, and we will take a brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. Is there further discussion on Senate Bill 101? Representative Edgman.
Yes, thank you. So I was on the committee in 2016 when the decision, I believe we made the decision at that point not to fund it. There was concern about the executive director, old blurry memories here, you know, $112,000 salary and a job that maybe wasn't full-time in Anchorage. The composition of the House majority at that time was very different than it is now, so just to put that into context. But I'm not going to oppose the bill leaving, and I'm really, I'm of two minds on this issue because I look at the larger picture, and, over the weekend, the governor had amendments totaling $19 million, essentially, to fight the state government, Arctic strategies, voice of the Arctic, endangered species, navigability, statehood defense. We had an amendment before this committee of $700,000 to create two positions, the Department of Natural Resources. Now we're putting more money in. And at some point, and I support a lot of what this CAFCA does, I was around when Mike Kelly, by the way, helped create or refund CAFCA back in 2007 or 2008 or whenever it was, way back when. I was actually in the building in 1990 when it was defunded too. So it's had its moments, and then there's been support that's waned, and the work that it does, I think, is very important. But the question I know that we tackled in 2016 was it worth the money that the legislature was spending on it? At that point, the legislature felt it wasn't, and then the Senate didn't concur with us back in 2019, and I wasn't on the committee at that point either. So, you know, we're concerned about what we're spending, every dollar that goes to this committee, other committee. But I see a lot of money being mounted towards fighting the Biden administration. And for the record, the Biden administration has been cooperative on the King Cove Road. I'm not going to oppose this. I'll probably vote for it on the House floor. But I just want to sort of put that entire picture out there for the committee to understand the context of what's going on here. A lot of money fighting the federal government. And my experience over the years is we don't really get a lot of bang for that dollar. We had the Arctic Power Office established back east fighting for ANWR. And that really didn't go a lot of places until, you know, just a few years ago, a couple years ago with the Trump administration, the efforts of our congressional delegation. So just want to put all that in context and appreciate the moment or two to speak to it.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Anything further? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I sort of share some of the sentiments of Representative Edgman that we have spent a lot of money on statehood defense and federal overreach has been discussed many times in this committee. And this bill has a, if they're concerned about a executive that maybe didn't have a full-time job, and back in 2017, personnel services was $45,000, and now it's $178,000 for one position. So if you're worried about an executive director that doesn't maybe earn their keep, I don't, $178,000 is a one permanent full-time position to reestablishing staff support. So it's a staffer, it's not an executive director, but I think it's 163 in personnel services. So,
Ms. Curtis, would you like to comment on
pretty,
that?
Pretty well paid position for a staffer.
For the record, this is Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. Before I comment, I just want to make sure I understand the point. Was the representative referring to the FY17 amount or FY16 amount? That the FY16 amount is on page 3, but I heard you say something about FY17.
Well, that was just the page I turned to, FY16. Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
FY16
is $148,000 for personnel services. And I'm hearing that was an executive director, and now we have $163,000 or $163,000 for a staff position. Is that correct? $163,000 for a staff position?
Through the chair, I don't have access to the fiscal note. But just to clarify, the information on page 11 of the audit is capital expenditures that were incurred. So they had a capital appropriation back in FY15, and they used that remaining capital appropriation to fund activities in 17. So they didn't have an operating budget in 17. So you see a little the smaller amounts. That's kind of to wrap some things up in that year. It doesn't really reference an actual full-time person. The fiscal note that you have that's attached to this bill shows 163, and that's for one position, as I understand it. And that 163, mind you, is not their salary. That's their salary and benefits. That's their retirement, the health insurance. So this person's not making $163,000, just to clarify.
Through the chair, no, I'm aware of that. All the salaries we usually see generally are about $100,000 per person. You know, if there's 10 people, it's usually $1 million. Some areas, and then that's someone making, say, $75,000 plus $25,000 in benefits or something like that. I mean, I'm just rounding up, but often when you look at personnel numbers for a lot of departments, you can kind of come up with about $100,000 per person. So this one's $163,000. So obviously, I realize it's not all salary, that some of it's benefits. So, I mean, the salary is probably $140,000, something like that. I'm just ballparking. I don't know the percentage for a health package and a retirement package, but maybe $25,000 a year, $30,000.
It's pretty substantial through the chair. Your benefits package, and the cost of it. But I wasn't involved with. Looks like this person's a higher range person than a staff. This isn't a person who's an administrative assistant. This is someone who's probably got some background in law, or can understand and navigate the federal register,
all of the different, I mean, someone's going to have some level of background to understand ANILCA and ANSCA and the Statehood Act and to navigate and be able to provide guidance to folks. So this is going to be an upper level position.
And just in fairness, the individual that testified, Ms. Cunnings, I think it was. Tina Cunnings, yeah. She presented at the ANILCA training that Representative Foster and I attended, and it was made painfully clear that ANILCA is three encyclopedias. I mean, and you have to really be a specialist to understand it. So, I mean, just to be fair about that.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to reiterate that the current administration did issue an executive order that directed at least 30% of our lands and waters be placed in permanent protection status by 2030. And there is a major opportunity cost that we lose by having a moratorium on new oil and gas leases, by making it more difficult for people in rural Alaska to access land and maintain their subsistence lifestyle. And as has been stated, we need a knowledgeable resource that will fully understand ANILCA and the actions that the Biden administration is taking. So it may be a fiscal note that we would rather not put out right now with the deficit that we're looking at, but there's also a major cost if we just don't do anything and let the administration take away access to state land.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Just that I would associate myself with both of Representative Edgman's comments, both that it's that the forum that I attended is reflects that it's complicated. I would say that at that forum, as wonderful, and I mean it, as the presenters like Ms. Cunning were, there was this belief that everyone in the room must think the federal government is sort of inherently evil. And I don't mean to be too unkind to Ms. Cunning, but there was sort of this, we hate the federal government, don't we, approach. And, you know, I think there is a silent majority, to use a Nixonian term, in the state that is unorganized and that just doesn't feel that way. Either they're not thinking about it or they don't feel that way. And I would say that there is some redundancy in, and I cite to the programs that Representative Edgman noted, but also there's another one. There's the Public Access and Defense Unit. It's a whole unit within DNR that works on this. So you've got redundancy all over the place, and I think a lot of it is political. Now, does it have some effect? Yes, it does. But I think that I think it's meant to be talked about and to be and to say, look what I'm doing. And we all do some of that. And now I will say, when CACFMA came up for renewal, I think in my early tenure here, I looked at their online website, and I had to tip my cap. It, you know, it's quite impressive. It informs the public when the meetings are, what the issues are, and it was fairly neutral in its presentation. So those are just some comments.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
I'm good.
Co-Chair Foster.
Up in the Nome area in the Bering Strait region, spoken with numerous folks on this issue of just being able to get into the park. And I don't know that anyone, at least in our area, has ever, I'm sure there's some people, but generally speaking, I feel like most folks are not of the opinion, oh, the federal government's this horrible, you know, entity, and they're the ones who are keeping us from being able to access this area. I think for them it's just more about, boy, we sure would love to, you know, be able to access some of these trails. And, you know, it could be for hunting. It could be whether it's sport or subsistence, whether it's folks from some of the villages that want to be able to get to the hot springs because traditionally that was a place where they would go, or if it's just tourists who want to go there, or, you know, just, you know, like I say, folks who want to be able to get up to Deering from Nome, and you know, many years ago that was, you know, an old route that folks might use, and yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further? Senator Rivak, any closing comments? Okay, thank you. With that, Mr. Co-Chair, do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, I move Senate Bill 101, version 32-LS0620/B from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 101 is moved from committee. This concludes our agenda for this morning. This afternoon, we will hear House Bill 202, Permanent Fund Dividend Royalties. That meeting is at 1:30 p.m. With that, nothing else to come before the committee. At 10:01 a.m., we are adjourned. Thank you.
Schroeder. It looked like a testifier. Anyway, hello, this is microphone number 13.
Hi, microphone 13.
Microphone number 12.
Sounds good.
Microphone 11.
Good.
House Finance to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:36 p.m. on Monday, May 17th, 2021. Present today in the room are Representative Wohl and Representative, nobody's here. Anyway, sorry. Representative Rule, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, Representative Foster, and myself, or I should say Co-Chair Foster, Co-Chair Merrick, and myself, Vice Chair Ortiz. And with that, this afternoon we'll consider House Bill 202, Permanent Fund Dividend Royalties, by Representative Merrick, followed by House Bill 70, the Capital Budget. House floor is scheduled to start at 2:30, so we will recess around then to the call of the Chair. Representative Merrick, could you and your staff please come forward, place yourself on the record, and begin your presentation?
Someone here to grill her.
Can we have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. We are back on the record. Representative Mary, could you begin your presentation, please?
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair Ortiz. Good afternoon, committee. Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, members of the House Finance Committee. For the record, I'm Representative Kelly Merrick, District 14 in Eagle River. Before the committee today is House Bill 202, an act relating to the Alaska Permanent Fund, relating to dividends for state residents, relating to certain state income. This is a conversation that is necessary as part of our budgeting process and long overdue in paying a sustainable dividend into the future. As this committee is very aware, the state has struggled to pay for both required services and the dividend using the 43-year-old formula. Since FY17, with the actions of former Governor Walker, the dividend has been an ad hoc draw. The 2016 legislature recognized this problem and restructured our budget around the POMV framework. And that meets our constitutional obligations for services and provides a type of spending cap. Legislators have since had a difficult decision to make as part of our responsibility to make our state, fiscally sustainable in the long term. There are three areas which we can change to solve our financial problems: our spending, our revenues, and the PFD. The operating budget has been cut year after year, and while I still support a smaller budget, we have recognized that the big, easy, change-making cuts are gone. Our capital budget has been cut by more than 90%. When we protect the POMV, we maintain fiscal stability and a low tax environment for families and businesses. Many don't support additional or increased taxes, and my district is one of those. That leaves the PFD. Mr. Vice Chair, Co-Chair Foster, and members of the committee, we have all heard our constituents say, follow the law or change the law. This bill changes the law. While the foundation of the permanent fund is oil money and other resource development, the dividend is no longer based on Alaska's natural resources. Instead, it's based on investments by the Permanent Fund Corporation. This bill goes back to the intent of the dividend. It ties it directly to resource development by setting aside a portion of the royalties received by the state for payout. Specifically, 30% of the royalties currently going to the general fund would be paid to Alaskans before the general fund receives its cut of royalties outside of the POMV. There's been growing recognition in the last few years that following the 1982 dividend statute does not make our state fiscally sustainable and requires violating the POMV spending cap. House Bill 202 addresses these problems by repealing the current formula and replacing it with one that is simpler and sustainable. That's the big picture, and that's the tough one. Mr. Co-Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I don't think there's one person in this building who wants to hand out a smaller PFD check. especially after the last year with business closures and unemployment. But putting Alaska back on a financial track, a stable financial track, is just as important. With that, I would like my staff, Tally Teal, to go over the bill in more detail.
Excuse me, I'd like to let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Laban and Representative Rasmussen at around 1:40 p.m.
Continue. Thank you. For the record, my name is Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. I think rather than go through the entire sectional analysis for this bill, I'll just kind of highlight the two sections that are the, really the big ones. Section 1 removes the existing formula that currently determines the amount of the dividend. Section 7, then, jumping right to the end there, lays out how to pay a new dividend, how to determine that new amount. It's pretty straightforward. As Representative Merrick mentioned, it takes 30% of royalties and basically designates them for payment of the dividend. You may notice that the language in Section 7 says that the legislature may appropriate this money instead of shall. I did ask our drafter about that. That is a result of the 2018 Willikowski case, and where the courts determined that the dividend specifically is subject to appropriation, and so that permissive language is more appropriate here. I think at this point I'm going to turn to our flow chart. That's the green one that should have been in your packet there, just a single page. Looks like that.
And excuse me, Ms. Teal, I'd like to also let the record reflect that we've been joined by Representative Thompson and Representative Johnson at around 1:42.
Perfect. All right, so looking at that flow chart, you can see our natural resource income across the top there, the actual statutory definition of that income, what we kind of collectively refer to as royalties there. And through those lines, you can see where it would go. On the left side, you can see that 25% of all of that royalty income goes to directly to the permanent fund corpus itself. That's per the Constitution. And you've got an additional 25% of what we call new fields, leases signed after December 1st, 1979, that also go to the permanent fund corpus. That goes to pay out the POMV. And as you can see on the note at the bottom there, that is unchanged by HB 202. So that's current constitution and statutory designations, and that remains the same. In the middle there, you can see that 30% of that income going to dividends. As Representative Merrick said, that happens before that remainder goes to the general fund. That's that last column there, which kind of avoids that competition between paying a dividend and providing for state services. So currently, again, that little note at the bottom, all of those funds go to the general fund. So this kind of diverts 30% of those. Next, we'll turn to our model, which is a kind of a one-pager with a series of graphs that our Legislative Finance Division does a great job of modeling all of these scenarios for us. This is the model for HB 202. I won't go through the whole thing in detail, but you can see the highlights here. On the bottom left, you can see that our reserve balances continue to grow, or at least remain stable there out through FY30. In the middle right graph, you can see that the value of the permanent fund itself continues to grow into the future, which is good for current and future Alaskans through that POMV payout. On the top right, you can see that the amount of the dividend is significantly smaller under HB 202 than it would be under the current statutory formula, but it does grow over time based on projections that we have. And most importantly, you can see in the top left-hand corner there, this plan does result in a balanced budget with no ERA overdraw. So all of that combines to make a reasonable, sustainable, and most important, stable fiscal environment for our state. Any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Teal. Representative Merrick, before we take any questions in the committee, it's been the decision that we should probably hear from public testimony. There's been a number of people who have been waiting patiently online. So if there's no objections, I would like to open public testimony. And with that, we will do that. Opening public testimony. Is there anybody in the room wishing to testify on this particular bill, HB 202? Seeing none, we will go online to folks who have been waiting. We'll first go to Mr. Cliff Groh in Anchorage. Mr. Groh, are you there? And before you start, Mr. Groh, let's just remind all people who are listening in, we'd like to limit testimony to 2 minutes. And Mr. Groh, are you there?
Yes, Last call. Mr. Groh, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. I'm here. I'm sorry. I apologize. Can you hear me?
We can hear you perfectly fine. You can begin your two-minute testimony. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I'm Cliff Groh. I'm a lifelong Alaskan. I have a substantial role in creating the permanent fund dividend in 1982 when I was a legislative assistant. I worked by far the most on the development and passage of legislation that established the dividend that year. Alaska needs a comprehensive strategy to address the state of Alaska's deep structural deficit that looks in that strategy needs to look beyond the next fiscal year. That comprehensive and long-term strategy needs to include a revised formula for paying permanent fund dividends, protection for the permanent fund against overspending, and new revenues to help pay for public services like education, public safety, and transportation. I commend the sponsor for proposing legislation that recognizes that the current permanent fund dividend formula is unsustainable, and also recognizes that Alaska needs a new, sustainable, and predictable formula for paying dividends that does not leave the legislature annually tied in knots. The proposed formula in House Bill 202, however, goes too far in balancing a budget on the backs of permanent fund dividends, permanent fund dividend recipients, including children, to avoid collecting taxes from high earners in Alaska, some of whom are non-residents. The best approach is for legislators to bargain forcefully and skillfully with each other and the governor this year to produce a fair and sustainable dividend formula along with legislation generating new revenues. The upcoming special sessions this summer and the governor's strong desire for constitutional amendment guaranteeing a permanent fund dividend create a political environment where those highly desirable goals to be achieved. I stand ready to help. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Groh. Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I was just curious. I've heard a lot of people mention that the dividend places a financial burden on the backs of children, and I'm curious what your thoughts are in regards to the level of funding that goes to the K-12 formula in the budget, because it seems like that is a direct benefit to children and families in Alaska.
Thank you. I appreciate that question. The state of Alaska has a constitutional obligation to provide for a public education system for K through 12, and the Division of Legislative Finance has shown that the budget has generally been cut, including for K through 12 education, although by smaller amounts. Speaking of the last 8 years, the cuts have been smaller than. But in some other areas, such as the capital budget and the University of Alaska. I think it's important that as a proud product of Alaska's public schools, I very much support having a strong and healthy K through 12 education system, and that might also include, I would hope, universal pre-K. And I'm concerned that simply cutting the dividend to avoid taxes on high earners, which is what I think this calculus that some legislators have been making, is not the right way to go. We need a revised dividend formula as well as additional new revenues for our state to help make our fiscal system work and our economy work.
Any other questions in the committee for Mr. Groh? Seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Groh, for your testimony today. We appreciate you very much, and thank you for your patience. We'll move on to Mr. Connor Bell here in Juneau. Mr. Connor Bell, are you present?
For the record, this is Connor Bell with Legislative Finance. I'm just online for questions, so I have not called in to testify, but thank you.
Okay, I apologize for that. Moving forward, I believe we have Queen Parker in Starling, Alaska. Sterling,
Yes. Yeah, my name is Queen Parker, and I live in Sterling, Alaska. And this is really short. I just want to say no to the HB 202. I want my statutory PFD, and I'm in agreement with all those that oppose HB 202. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Parker. Are there any questions of the committee?
Nope.
Seeing none, thank you for your testimony today. Moving on, Ms. Terry Lyons in Wasilla. Terry Lyons?
Yes, my name is Terry Lyons, and I 100% do not support this bill. This bill makes changes for the worse. I know you don't care, and you will only ignore what Alaskans' wishes are and the statutory laws. You will take care of your special interests first. You need to get behind Governor Dunleavy's 50-50 split. Senator Shower's models make much more sense than the models that I just heard. And his models have shown us with the 50-50 split, it will grow our state income and our PFD funds. I realize most of you are unable to understand the math. Hire a tutor, get educated, understand it, comprehend it, and get behind the governor's 50-50 split. Do not pass this piece of crap bill that's written by a trans Republican. Stop stealing from us and our future generations. And that is my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Lyons, for being with us today and providing your testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. Lyons from the committee? Seeing none, moving forward, brief at ease. We are back on the record. Going next to Charles McKee in Anchorage. Mr. McKee, are you there? Mr. McKee, are you ready to provide your testimony today? We will go back to Mr. McKee if he comes back in contact with us. Moving forward to Cami Taylor in Anchorage, Alaska. Ms. Taylor, are you there?
I am.
Please proceed.
Members of the committee, my name is Cami Taylor, and I've been an Alaska resident since 1977, before we had a permanent fund dividend, and we still paid an income tax. I am calling in support of HB 202 because I support protecting the principle of the permanent fund. HB 202 is a sustainable statutory solution that I believe will protect the principal of the permanent fund and protect the percent of market value draw. I urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor, for your testimony. Any questions from the committee? Hearing none, moving forward to Chris Eichlenbaum in Wasilla.
Hi, this is Chris Eichlenbaum calling from District 7. How do you copy?
Loud and clear. Thank you for being with us, sir.
Okay. Hey, I'm going to oppose this HB 202, and we're grossly mismanaging our resources. We're the largest state with the fewest amount of people with the most resources, and yet you want us to dig into our pockets for more government. That's just ridiculous. The people should have first call on any revenues coming out of the chute. Right now, you guys have us last. We're the PFDs last on your agenda. You want to see what crumbs you can give us, what's left. You know, that's not the way you do business. It's like, if I'm the resource owner, I need to get paid first. And we, the people of Alaska, own these resources. I'd like to see more co-sponsors to this PFD grabbing bills, because these never end well, and usually we get rid of all the people that want to plug their name to, you know, getting rid of the PFD, and this basically does that. I mean, you know, the POMV model will basically, on a few bad years, is going to deplete the fund. I mean, there's no guarantee of growth with a POMV, which there is with the earnings model, the one we used for 42 years that worked just perfectly until you guys overspent with a large budget. So contrary to some of the beliefs and lies that we got coming out of the House there, you know, people would much rather receive their statutory dividend than pay the middleman and get more government services to fewer people. So I oppose this bill. Any questions for me?
Thank you, Mr. Eichenlaub, for your testimony. I believe we have one question. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I appreciate you calling in, and I was just curious if the split of the royalties was increased to 50, 60, 70% of the state royalties being paid out in a dividend. Is that something that you would be more inclined to support?
Well, here's the way I support the non-POMV model, because over time, there's no guarantee with that model. We have a few bad years in the stock market. See, y'all were attached to oil. And then when oil goes down, everybody's like, well, I need your money. We need to tax oil companies more because we need to spend more money. Well, the same thing happens with the POMV model. I mean, you're taking a percentage of what the value of the fund. If the fund gets a 40% hit like it did in 2008, and you have a couple bad years behind that, you know, with Biden in there, anything's possible. I mean, we could lose everything. So then what? What are you going to do? I mean, with the other mode, you're going by earnings. I know that doesn't give you guys a clear, flat guide path, you know, with the money using the old formula, but that means we need to develop our resources and get more money from other areas. Don't count, you know, we're putting all of our eggs in one basket, which is kind of ridiculous. Nobody does that. I mean, you want to count only on oil. Now you're on the PFD because that's a bigger pot of money, and now you got the government coming in giving COVID money, and oh, wait a minute, you know, we got some money over here, let's go over there. So we got to do something that sustains. I mean, you can't sustain yourself on a POMV model. I mean, unless, you know, it goes like clockwork and they gain 8% every year, which it's not going to happen. I mean, yeah, you might have it for a few years, but you get a few bad years, and
Mr. Eichenlaub, we have a follow-up question from Representative Rasmussen. Representative Rasmussen.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I do agree with, I share many of your concerns. I think that we need a stronger spending cap, and I would actually like to see something constitutionalized in a spending cap if we can find the right formula for it. But my question, I guess, is with the royalties, because, you know, as a fifth-generation Alaskan myself, I've received a dividend every year since I was born, and I think that the general feeling amongst Alaskans is that it's our share of the mineral resource wealth that the state produces, and so the majority of the funds that come into the state from the oil and gas and mining companies do come in the form of royalties, which would incentivize more production if the dividends were tied directly to the royalty payment as being proposed in House Bill 202. I was just curious if it would be more supported, have more broad consensus amongst Alaskans if the majority of the royalty resource mineral wealth was coming and being paid out as a dividend to Alaskans, such as, you know, 50, 60, 70%. So that government gets a smaller share of that and a larger share goes out to the people of Alaska.
Okay, let me explain something to you. The people of Alaska own all the resources. It's ours, and we get first call. I mean, that's simply the way business works. You know, if you're a business owner, you work your butt off all week, you don't pay everybody else but yourself. And so even the nonprofits pay the people that work there first before they, you know, they go broke. They're going to pay their people first. So that's what we need to be doing. And we get sidetracked on these different formulas. I mean, that's why our state can't be trusted. I mean, you all change deals. I mean, there's no tax deal that's been steady. I mean, everything is knee-jerk reaction. Hey, we need more money. Let's go after the oil companies for more money. Well, we tap them dry. Let's go after the PFD. I mean, you guys have to show some kind of constraints. I mean, we're mismanaging our resources. I can't say that more clearly, but we got here from mismanaging our resources.
Thank you, Mr. Eichenlaub. You know, we have one more question from Representative Wool.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Sure.
This is not a question, so you don't need to respond. It's just a quick statement.
Oh, I will. Thank you.
Well, I think what the reason we're at a POMV model is that oil revenue in the last 10 years has gone from $10 billion to close to $1 billion. Secondly, you said that the permanent fund would have to do about 8%. Well, funny you say that. For the last 40 years, it's been averaging 8%. And Alaska is for the last 40 years. But anyhow, I don't really need a response. And lastly, Alaska is not a business, it's a state.
Thank you, Mr. Eichenlaub, for your testimony today. Thank you for being patient and providing us your testimony. Before we move on, I'd like the record to reflect that we were joined by Representative Carpenter at 1248 and Representative Edgman at 159. Moving forward in public testimony to Bert Houdling in Big Lake. Mr. Houdling.
Hi, my name is Bert Houdling. I represent myself, my child, and about a little over 4,000 Alaskans now that are 100% against HB 202. I find it grossly misrepresented there when you're saying that this is the only way forward and that you have cut the budget to the max. How can that be possible when our education is double the cost of per student than the rest of the nation? Or how about our healthcare system that is triple the cost of the rest of the nation? If you have truly cut the budgets, these two statistics all on their own would not be a factor in what is being discussed here today. I see this as an attempt to save the rich, the ones that we call the 1%. I hear that you don't want to tax them. Why not? Disproportionately, this bill right here is going to affect the poorest of the populations here in Alaska. The numbers show, coming from you guys, 260,000 Alaskans are living on welfare. Think how much a statutory PFD would remove off of that total, 20, 30, 40, 60,000 people that are no longer living in poverty by this one check. Think of how much that would be saving our state if we were to do that. 150,000 children in Alaska are going to be paying the price, substantially being taxed. You hear that right. 150,000 plus Alaskan children are going to be taxed just so that you can continue to pay the unions, the special interests, and the majority out there that Alaskans have been opposing since day one. Please, please, wake up. Look at the actual numbers. I'm not for SJR6, but let me tell you, it's a hell of a lot better than what's being proposed here. And if I had a say in the matter, SJR1 would be the only bill being presented by this committee here today. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Houdling. Are there any members from the committee who have a question for him? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony again. Moving forward to Pauline Swanson in Juneau, Alaska. Pauline, are you there?
Hello, Mr. Chairman. I'm with the Permanent Fund Corporation. I'm just online for questions today.
Thank you for that. Moving forward, Ms. Jean Holt in Palmer, Alaska.
Yes, hi. This is Jean Holt in Palmer, Alaska, and I'm representing myself and my husband. I am part of groups that are in opposition of taking the PFD. We are in total opposition of HB 202 being shoved down our throats. And this is all being fast-tracked without really not a lot of exposure to the public, and to totally permanently steal our PFD. We are sick of how the Democrats and Rhino legislators are selling out to special interests with bloated budgets and putting our statutory PFD at the bottom of the food chain. This H202 totally wrong, and it's not working. It wouldn't work, and it would eliminate what is rightfully each Alaskan's fair share of our mineral rights through the PFD. It's being fast-tracked again, and I say that a lot because it is being fast-tracked
you guys have been busy beavers down there this past week trying to get this bill passed. I am in support of SJR 6 and 7 of the governor's bill. I'm in support of this instead of SJR 1 because at least we can have an open communication instead of being deep-throated with you guys eliminating the permanent fund. And I don't see how we ask our legislators who still have a conscience to stop this insanity and stop HB 202 and vote no.
Thank you, Ms. Holt. Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, moving forward to Kelly Fischler in Juneau, Alaska. Ms. Fischler. Okay, not available at this time. Moving forward to Alex McDonald in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, and members of the committee, my name is Alex McDonald, representing myself, and I am calling to oppose HB 202. The population for the state of Alaska hasn't really changed much in the last 15 years. It's government spending that has. You guys keep spending and spending and have shown that you cannot manage your portion of the earnings. That's not a reason for you to take the residents' portion of the earnings to mismanage as well. Kids and elders are paying for your bloated budget. Everyone in the state's been taken for about $7,000. I mean, think about an elder on a fixed income trying to fill their heating fuel tank. Would you rather them fill it with their earnings or create a government program for heating fuel assistance? I mean, the choice is pretty obvious. The people know how to spend their money better than the government has. That's why this program was set up. We need to oppose this bill and protect the PFD. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Are there any questions for Mr. McDonald from the committee? Seeing none, we're going to scroll back up with the possibility of Mr. McKee rejoining us. Mr. McKee, are you online and ready to provide your testimony?
Yes, I was here before. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Yes, my name is Charles McKee. I wish to testify against this bill, and the reason being is Tuesday, May the 4th, when a newspaper, Anchorage Daily News, broadcast a top heading where the foster youth found out that their money was being pocketed by state agencies or co-opt out. And I'd like to point out you already have a self-insured insurance program called Workers' Comp, which is doing the same thing, which is why I finally brought suit against the state to the attention of the U.S. Attorney General for civil action due to replication of the new to the new matter pertaining to what you've been doing all along. You should study transactions in real estate and look at what escrow agents actually do. You're supposed to inform us as to the paperwork signed and what it means rather than just being a representative for your own gain. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. McKee. Are there questions for Mr. McKee from the committee? Seeing none. Moving back to Philip DeLand in Anchorage. Philip, are you there?
DeLand, yes, hello.
Please proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Philip. I've called in to oppose HB 202. My background, I was born in this town. I've lived in this town my whole life. I graduated from UAA with a Bachelor of Science in Geologic Sciences. And the permanent fund dividend was established in order to compensate the people in exchange for ceding our mineral rights to the state. It's a fairly good system. The state manages the oil and gas exploration, but in exchange, the people we don't have rights to the minerals under our own property. We have to ask the state for permission and get a permit to develop land that we own. And so in order to compensate the people for ceding our rights in that way, the permanent fund dividend was set up that we would get a portion of the oil profits. That is not your money. That is our money. That is money co-owned by the people of Alaska, and we all own a share in basically in the company of Anchor of Alaska that is developing the mineral resources in our name. It doesn't belong to you. The oil doesn't belong to you. The land doesn't belong to you. The permanent fund doesn't belong to you. The state of Alaska is managing these resources for the people. So I am vehemently opposed to this bill. I believe we should follow the law and get full payouts, and I believe that we should get restoration of payouts from that have been confiscated for the past, what, five or however many years where we've been getting half payments or quarter payments. It's an unlawful capping of the amount, and you're actually confiscating money that belongs to the people.
Thank you, Mr. DeLand. We have a question from Representative Rassman for you.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I'm born and raised in Anchorage, went to the Anchorage School District and attended the university, and I just wanted to see if, based on your testimony, I understand that you recognize the dividend is a share of Alaskans' mineral wealth, and I was curious if the percentage is changed. Currently, the state is constitutionally mandated to pay 25% of the royalty revenues to the permanent fund corpus. But if the formula was changed in 202 to have a greater percentage go to the people, is that something that you would be more supportive of?
I don't support changing the formula. I think that it's worked fine all this time. I just support actually following the law. So the capping at 1,000 or whatever, or 500, that has been happening for years, I could have really used that money. I know a lot of people that could have really used that money. And it wasn't the state's decision to decide to confiscate half or three quarters or however much of it. I think the formula is fine the way it is. I know there's millions and billions of dollars in that fund. I don't think that we should drain it, paying it out to the people. I think that the payments as they are working fine. We've got a good amount of money saved up in that fund and getting dividends to it to the people in a regular manner as the law prescribes is the best thing for everybody. So many people count on that payment to catch up on their bills, to buy vehicles that they're going to use for hunting and fishing and exploring Alaska, like we all love to do. So many people count on that to make rent. So many people count on that. Like, people are spending expecting to get their full PFD, and then when they only got half of it, it was like falling off a cliff for a lot of people. Suddenly they're coming up short. How are we going to make rent? How are we going to buy food this week? How are we going to expand our business, right? So there's so many ways that this has actually hamstrung the people of Alaska, and you don't have the right to do that.
Mr. DeLong, we have another question from Representative Rasmussen.
I share some question. It's actually a comment, but I agree with you that we need to have a plan that is sustainable, and we've had legislative finance and even a member of this committee who proposed a full dividend during the operating budget. Their staff said that continuing to pay the dividend at the level as described in law without any major cuts or new taxes would drain the fund within just a few years. And so I think the balance here that we're looking to accomplish is ensuring that we have a dividend for generations to come, and at the same time developing resources as best we can and keeping the downward pressure on the budget. So I appreciate your comments, and we'll definitely take that into consideration. Thank you.
So my question for you would be, how much money is in the permanent fund right now, right? Do you know how much?
Are you referring to the corpus or the earnings reserve?
Well, okay, so the earnings reserve is in the billions, right?
Through the chair, yes.
Representative Merrick, would you like to comment?
brief at ease. We're back on the record, and thank you, Mr. DeLon, for your testimony today. And with that, is there anyone else in the room or online who are wishing to testify on House Bill 202? Seeing none, we will close public testimony. We have a few minutes left. Are there questions for Representative Merrick from members of the committee on House Bill 202? Representative LeBond.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair, and thank you, Co-Chair Merrick, for bringing forward an option for the committee and for the legislature to consider. And I guess I don't really have a question, but just rather, this is the discussion, the debate that we're going to be having. And I know many of us are working on different plans. Of course, I'm working on a plan too. So hopefully, in the very near future, we can reconcile our differences and accept that no matter what comes out of this, somebody's not going to like some part of it. And that's just a given. And I just, again, would like to thank you for bringing forward House Bill 202. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Representative LeBond. Representative Edgman.
Yes, I want to echo the same thing. I really appreciate you putting this proposal in front of the committee to consider. It's I don't think, going to pass this year unless there's something out there that you know, that we're not aware of. But just to put on the record that I'm born and raised in Alaska too. And I want the permanent fund dividend to be around forever. I want it to be sustainable. But I also want to recognize the fact that Governor Dunleavy's own budget this year is paid for by 72% of it. Total, about three quarters of the governor's budget is paid by earnings from the permanent fund. A lot of people on the line perhaps know that, perhaps they don't. But we're now the only state in the entire country, the only entity in all of Western civilization who essentially pays for state government from earnings from an endowment. We need to protect that endowment. We need to make sure that it's there forever. And like every caller today has alluded to, the permanent fund dividend is a critical component of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Edgman. Any further comments? Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. It wouldn't be appropriate if I didn't speak. Now, as I said to Representative Merrick in a previous meeting, I like this bill. I like the concept of tying the PFD to the performance of oil in some way, shape, or form. And I myself have proposed legislation that does that over the years. So I do like it for that reason. And I guess my question, and this doesn't have to be answered now, but I'm just sort of posing it in the general, and that if you're looking at the FY22 to FY28 of $333 to $477 million that ostensibly won't be going to the general fund because it'll be paying a PFD. Is there enough surplus in the general fund for all these years going out? And I know we've discussed a lot of that in this committee, and sometimes maybe even this year we see a surplus, but the year isn't over, and whatever budget the Senate passes to us is going to be different than the budget that we pass to them and different than the governor's budget. And how we fund certain things like oil tax credits or school bond debt reimbursement or any of these things, depending on which fund we use. So I guess my question is, I'm happy to have a bill like this if it's sustainable, if we can afford, you know, $300 to $400 or $500 million that otherwise wouldn't be going to the general fund, if we can absorb that kind of reduction to the general fund. And again, it's more of a general abstract question. You don't need to answer right now, but if comment if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative Wohl, and through the chair. I believe that is something that the permanent fund organization, Ms. Angela Riddell, spoke to when she was in House Finance, that this is the royalties are a small amount that goes to you know, their portion of the permanent fund. So if we took the 25% out of there, it's a minimal amount in comparison to billions of dollars. But I think what makes this plan unique is 100% of the POMV will be going to pay for state services. So it will not be competing with the PFD, which it does now. You know, the PFD and the state services compete. And I think that's where a lot of people are having a hard time is, you know, what percent should go to the people, what percent should go to government. And so that's why I like this plan, because it ties it right to, you know, development of our oil and gas and minerals in this state. And, you know, there were a few things that were brought up by callers that, you know, maybe I'd like to address a little bit. You know, one caller said that the PFD is paid after we do all government services. This plan pays the PFD before, so you're not competing with that. And it separates it from the POMV draw. People talk about wanting their share, that, you know, they can't drill on their land, so that they want their share of the mineral rights. This is Alaska's share of the mineral rights. And people say that they, you know, I was born and raised in Alaska too. I received every dividend since, you know, they started doing it. And I used that money to go to college. And had my family not had those dividend checks, I probably couldn't have afforded to go to college. But I want my kids to be able to go to college and have money for that. So this plan keeps a sustainable PFD. If we go with some of these other super high dollar dividend plans, the dividend will be gone in just a few years. And that, you know, to me is unacceptable. So I think it's important to realize that the permanent fund goes out to every Alaskan, not just Alaskans that need it. And a lot of times Alaskans that need it are ones that need state services. And if we pay out huge dividends, we can't afford to provide for our most needy Alaskans. But I appreciate the committee hearing this bill today. I really do. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Representative Merrick. And looking at the time and knowing that we're scheduled to go back on the floor at 2:30, I believe we will set House Bill 202 aside and take it up at a later date. And with that, the committee will stand at recess.
Good afternoon. Will the House Finance Committee come back to order, please? Next on our agenda for today is House Bill 70, the capital budget. This committee heard an overview of HB 70 on May 4th, and since then have heard several presentations about various topics in the budget. My office has been working closely with Senator Bishop's office to craft the capital budget. I've appreciated the collaboration between our two bodies. I hope the federal dollars anticipated to come this fall will make our capital budget expenditures this year far more robust than currently outlined in this budget. And with that, I will entertain a motion. Co-Chair Foster.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that the CS for HB 70 Finance version 32-GH1507/G be adopted as the working documents.
I'll object for the purpose of discussion. This version of HB 70 looks significantly different than the governor's proposed FY 22 budget. And here to go through the changes is my staff, Tally Teal. Ms. Teal, please come forward, place yourself on the record, and explain the changes from version A to version G. Representative Josephson.
Just a super fast question. When you talk about the changes, do you mean including the governor's amendments? So are we comparing this bill to the latest thing the governor did?
Ms. Teal.
For the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. Through the chair, Representative Josephson. Yes and no. I will point out during the presentation when we're comparing to the governor's original budget and when to the amended budget.
And for the record, this is a rollout of the capital budget, so we will not be going into specific projects on this list. We're just kind of getting a general overview today since we're running behind time. Ms. Teal.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Today we're discussing version G of HB 70, which members should have before them. In addition to the actual CS itself, there should be four reports from Legislative Finance Division. They should be numbered very clearly, 1, 2, 3, and 4 in the upper right-hand corner there, so it should make it pretty easy to follow along. We're going to start with report number 1. It's a one-pager. It's a funding summary broken down by agency showing UGF spending, unrestricted general fund spending, in the budget before us. You can see at the bottom of the page there, under totals, that the House budget has a significantly larger UGF spend than the governor's original proposal, about $324 million for the House proposal compared to about $120 million in the governor's original proposal. Two major reasons for this. First, the governor used two non-traditional funding sources in his original budget that the legislature has rejected in this budget. The first was Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, or AHFC, bonds. The governor originally proposed to use about $86 million of AHFC bonds for aviation and highway match within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, as well as about $18 million for the Village Safe Water matching funds in Department of Environmental Conservation, for that a total of about $104 million through that AHFC bond source. There was also about $10.5 million of PCE funding going to rural fuel projects. That is a non-traditional use of the PCE funds, so we've also unwound that. When you do both of those, the UGF spend for the governor's budget is about $224 million. The second reason for the increase there, the governor also proposed a $350 million general obligation bond package through HB 93. Although HB 93 did not advance this year, there were a few projects that were in the GO bond bill that have been pulled over into the capital budget. The total, I'll kind of point those out as we go through the number section a little bit later today, but the total UGF spend for those additional projects is about $137 million. Moving to report number 2, another one-pager. You can see the total spending for all funds contained in this budget. Two significant things to note here. You can see in that column number 4, which is comparing the governor's amended budget to the House CS before you today. So you can see across it, it's the fourth column over. You can see down at the bottom under totals other state funds, there's that removal of about $101 million in other funds. That's mostly due to the HFC bonds that we're no longer using as a funding source. You can also see a $620 million increase under federal authority. This is because of how we've chosen to structure the budget for the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities in this bill. It's not actually new money. I'm going to make that very clear. Basically, there are two ways to give DOTPF money for the STIP projects, and I believe the committee heard a presentation on the STIP and even some of what we're doing in the budget here today. Essentially, your two options are, one of them is to give one lump appropriation, one lump sum, which makes administration easier, but provides almost no legislative oversight as to where that money is spent. Or we can break those appropriations down into allocations. It makes administration a little more challenging for the department, but it also allows legislators and the public to see what projects the department plans with on funding with a STIP. It's been done both ways in the past. What we've chosen to do this year is go ahead and break those down into allocations, but with some important modifications. We've added two accounts, a project acceleration fund and a project contingency fund. These are separate pots of money that will allow for administrative flexibility that the department will need to keep these projects going while setting a more realistic number for each of those allocations. So again, just to stress that the department is receiving the same amount of money this year. It just looks a little bigger because of the way we've structured it. And I believe DOT is on the line if members have questions about that. But I think, seeing none, we can move on to the bill itself.
Ms. Teal?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Teal, you spoke about the Project Acceleration Fund. Where can I see that?
That will be in the number section itself. Yeah, so it doesn't show up here, but the reason that that federal authority total is so much higher is because of the structure.
Thank you.
Of course.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a listing that shows the changes or the difference, which items have been are different than the original bill?
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, yes, that is report number three.
Number three?
That's where we're headed now.
Okay.
So starting with section one, if you wanted to look at the bill, you could. It's about 32 pages of these appropriations and allocations. Rather than look at the bill itself, which can be a little challenging to interpret, I'd like to turn your attention to report number three. That's the bulky one there. I'd also like... was amiss at the beginning. I should have pointed out that all of these documents are available online for the public who is listening. So this document makes it a little bit easier to understand the number section. It also makes it easier to compare between the various proposals that are out there. So column one, you can see the governor's amended budget. In column two is the numbers from the Senate CS, which was rolled out earlier today in their committee. Column three are the numbers contained here in this committee substitute. Column four there is the comparing the governor's budget to the House CS, and column five is the Senate CS to the House CS. So this should make it pretty apparent about what's different between or among all of these proposals. I'll just kind of go through and point out a couple of highlights. First, on page one, you can see the West Susitna Road Access Project. This was originally a general obligation bond project that has been pulled over, and this version funds this project at the governor's initial request, that the amount of $8.5 million. Moving on to page two, the Alaska Travel Industry Association, you can see normally, or in the original budget, they would have gotten $5 million because we've got some money from the American Rescue Plan Act that will be dedicated to tourism. They've been taken care of elsewhere in the budget. Third project down there, you can see the Matsuboro Arctic Winter Games was not in the governor's original proposal, but has been included here for $1 million. I'm going to skip a couple pages here and...
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm just going down this first page, this Voice of the Arctic on page two. Was that in, that looks like that was neither in the Senate or the governor's budget, is that correct?
Voices, sorry, through the chair.
Oh, it's in governor's amended? Yes. Looks like it's in governor's amended. Page two, document number three.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, yes, it was in the governor's amended budget.
Okay, mm-hmm. And it stayed in the House version, but not in the Senate. I got it.
Yes. Didn't miss one here. There we go. Okay. Page six, Department of Fish and Game. There are two projects that you can see were left out of the House CS. Those were projects that were not funded last year through the capital budget process, and so the department asked for them in a supplemental and in the capital budget. They only needed one, and these projects were funded in the supplemental version. They were included in the House's version of HB 69, so they are not funded here.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And Ms. Steele, again, what specific fish and game projects are we referring to that are now funded in the supplemental?
Sorry, it's the second one. Oh, sorry, through the chair, Representative Ortiz. The second one down, Pacific Salmon Treaty Chinook Fishery Mitigation, and the one at the very bottom there, Wildlife Management Research and Hunting Access.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
I guess through the chair, Ms. Teal, page 6, Wildlife Management Research and Hunting, that is in the operating budget that we passed on the House floor?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, yes. We made a decision to include supplemental capital items in the operating budget, for clarity. Next, go to page 8. I did just want to touch on the first item on that page, statewide deferred maintenance, renovation, and repair. You see that the House CS number is just ever so slightly lower than the governor's request. This has to do with how much money is available to appropriate from the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Page 9, the third project down is the Fairbanks Youth Facility. This was originally a GEO bond project that was pulled over but not funded from UGF, and this is kind of a unique situation, and perhaps Ledge Finance would be better suited to speak to the specifics of this, but my understanding is that through a bond sale, a bond refinancing, there's an additional $18 million available for a capital project, and so the governor proposed to use those funds for this particular project.
Okay. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I see the fund source 1167. Could we get the full version of what fund that is?
Mr. Painter?
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division, and Mr. Steininger with OMB may be a better person, but I can reiterate what he told me. So the tobacco bonds were originally sold from the proceeds of a lawsuit, I think about 2 decades ago, and that capitalized the Northern Tobacco Security Corporation, which is a subsidiary of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. That corporation needs to refinance its debt, otherwise it may become insolvent in the next few years because of a decline in tobacco sales. With low interest rates currently, it's a very good time to refinance. To get a better rate on that refinance as a tax-exempt bond, the proceeds can be appropriated to a qualified capital project under IRS rules. So the proceeds are estimated to be about $18 million. The amount will vary depending on the interest rate when the bonds are sold. And so this was the project the governor chose to fund it because it's to fund with it, which is approximately $18 million. It could be any qualified capital project totaling about $18 million in order to accomplish the refinance.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, let me ask you, you wanted a quick rollout, and I'm about to move into a different lane on one topic. Do I have your authority to do that?
Representative Josephson.
Okay. Through the chair, Mr. Painter, on this Wildlife Management Research and Hunting Access item, page 6, the administration said, the administration wants $4 million on navigability issues. Well, in fairness, it was the Department of Law that wanted that. And so I'm just sort of surprised by this, but maybe OMB is a better source, unless you know or are familiar with this $10 million.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, I think OMB can speak better to that. There were two projects in the governor's budget. One was added in recent amendments that I'm not sure that have been fully fleshed out in this committee. So I think Mr. Steininger can probably provide more background on that particular project.
Mr. Steininger.
For the record, Neil Steininger, Office of Management and Budget. If I understand correctly,
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. If I understand correctly, you're asking about the Wildlife Management Research Hunting Access $10 million project here on page six. So that project is, and I always get these backwards, whether it's the Dingell Johnson or the Pittman Robertson funding that funds the wildlife and hunting access projects. It's not associated with the navigability or statehood defense projects. This is the annual recurring capital programs through the Department of Fish and Game that build out hunting access type projects. So you know, trails used by hunters, things of that nature. And last year with the truncated session, the department wasn't appropriated this project or the above sport fish project. And so there were supplemental asks. In this year's operating budget, we moved some of this wildlife management activity into the operating budget because some of the characteristics fit better there. And that is what Ms. Teal was referring to when she said this wasn't necessary since there's the supplemental and the operating portion.
Yes, follow up.
So it sounds like this is typical and sort of perfunctory and not especially unique.
It's through the chair, Representative Josephson, that's correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. And if you gentlemen would like to stay at the table just in case there's further questions. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just on this Fairbanks Youth Facility, that's a capital upgrade to an existing facility, I'm assuming, and it's Department of Health and Social Services. Is that the, maybe you don't know which building it is. I don't either, so I was just wondering if anyone knew which youth facility that's referring to.
Through the chair, Representative Wool, that would be the juvenile justice facility in Fairbanks. And I'm not familiar with you know, if there's a more colloquial name for the building, but it's a juvenile justice Fairbanks youth facility.
So the Fairbanks Correctional Center, I'm assuming.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Bart.
Yes.
It's in your district. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And going back to the $10 million Wildlife Management Research and Hunting Access, understand the historical nature of those funds. But is there in the process? Is there somewhere in these documents where we can see what the proposed breakdown of that spend of $10 million is, or is this pretty much what we got?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the Department of Fish and Game posts the results of their solicitations for spending within those programs. I believe the process is that they issue those solicitations after the appropriation is made, so I don't believe they have a list that this money specifically will be used for, but historical awards they would be able to give you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just to reference the wildlife management, it was my understanding that that was not UGF. It's designated in federal receipts. Is that correct in the operating budget as well?
Through the chair, Representative Rasmussen, that's correct. So they use Fish and Game Fund, so you know receipts from hunting licenses to match the federal receipts.
Thank you. Ms. Steele, please continue.
Right, again, for the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. Continuing on page 9 within the Department of Health and Social Services, don't think I covered the Palmer Alaskan Veterans and Pioneers Home Roof Replacement, which was another project that was originally in the GO bond bill and was pulled over into this budget. Moving to page 11. This Alaska Vocational Technical Center upgrades was also a GO bond project initially. The initial request was for $19.5 million, and through conversations with staff at Avtech, we've determined that only $12.5 is necessary for the projects that they're proposing to do this year. Page 12. within the Department of Law, the committee should be familiar with this particular project. The reason it shows up as not in the governor's amended budget is because it was initially a supplemental request, and so we've made it an FY22 request through this document. Moving to page 15, within the Department of Natural Resources, there are four projects: wildland firefighting aircraft replacement, wildland fire engine replacement, statewide firebreak construction program, and statewide park sanitation and facility upgrades that were all initially in the GO bond. You'll also see one new project towards the bottom of the page, the Snowmobile Trail Development Program and Grants. That is a project that was not included in the governor's official request, but has been included here.
And Ms. Teal, I believe that's the Snow Tracks program.
To the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Page 17, within the Department of Public Safety, the bottom two projects listed there, Alaska Wildlife Troopers, Marine Enforcement Repair and Replacement, and Boating Upgrades, Haulouts, and Vessel Replacement were also geobond projects. Now we get into DOT, and you can see all of the allocations that are listed here now. Provides for the bulk of the number section and the bulk of this document. If there are no questions on specific projects here, I think we've covered the general idea earlier. DOT started maybe page
20.
Page 20, thank you. And so the and it ends on page 37. So the next page that we'll discuss is page 38.
And if members have questions regarding specific projects in DOT, please just contact my office and we can get further information for you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, I swear I'll go right to page 20 after this, but page 15, through the chair for Mr. Steininger. Mr. Steininger, is the A-STAR project a permanent appropriation item? I just see it all the time, and I want to know if I should just anticipate always seeing it.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, the A-STAR project has been appropriated in phases over the last several years, so this is not the first time that it's been seen, but they are all discrete appropriations, and so I guess that it's not a permanent in the base budget, but it is a reoccurring project that continues on requiring additional funding at times.
Thank you.
Adam, co-chair.
Representative Edgman.
Are we allowed to ask what about projects that didn't make the cut or got taken out, or do you want to do that later?
If it's brief.
Well, money for the ATIA, Alaska Tourism. Why was that taken out? Because the ARP money, as I understand it, that's different. This is money for marketing. What's the rationale behind that?
Through the co-chair to Representative Edgman, it was my understanding through discussions with the Senate and with Legislative Finance that the ARPA money would cover those expenses. Additionally, that funding source, I believe, is the vehicle rental tax, which, with the downturn and visitors here, all those receipts may not be realizable.
Okay, thanks for putting that on the record. I'll probably revisit that later.
Thank you. Any further comments on that, Mr. Painter?
Through the chair, just one additional comment. The administration directed through the CARES Act funds recently $5 million of CARES Act money to ATIA for marketing Alaska as a COVID-safe destination. And in this body's budget, there was $10 million to ATIA for tourism marketing from the Coronavirus Relief Fund from ARPA funding as well. So it may not be for traditional tourism marketing and has to be in some way tied to the state's COVID status, but there have been, between those two, $15 million directed to ATIA.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Ms. Teal.
Thank you again for the record. Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. Just about done with this report number three. On page 38, there are two projects from the University of Alaska that were same story, geobond projects that were pulled over. And on page 39, through the courts, there's court statewide deferred maintenance that was also originally a geobond project. I think that takes us through the numbers section, which again is section one of the bill. To go through the rest of the sections there, section two is kind of a summary of funding by section, funding in section one by agency. Section three will be the statewide funding by fund source. Then we move to the language sections. So starting with section four on page 33, we start with RPL language. The same language as you see here was put in the operating budget in House Bill 69. Limits the governor's ability to spend pandemic-related federal money that comes in over the next year and makes it clear that the legislature will retain its power of appropriation going forward.
Ms. Teal?
Yes.
I think members are having some confusion on what page in which document we're on.
I'm sorry. I've returned, Madam Co-Chair, I've returned back to the bill itself. So setting aside report number 3 from Ledge Finance, we're on House Bill 70, version G.
Page number?
33.
33?
Yes.
Thank you.
Following there, other highlights from the language section there, 7 through 10 are reapproaches from agencies to the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Section 11, we kind of take a pause there for DNR.
So now we're in section 11, so we're on what page?
Section 4 to section 11.
Sorry, 7 through 10 were reappropriations. You're right. Can I have a brief at ease?
Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. Ms. Teal.
All right. I apologize for the confusion. We're going to start the language section over. Again, this is working from version G, so the actual bill in front of you. The language section starts with section 4, which is on page 33 of this document. That has to do with limiting, again, the RPL language that limits the governor's ability to spend that federal money that comes in.
Representative Ortiz.
Could you highlight the lines that speak specifically to that particular issue?
Exactly.
Brief it is. House Finance back on the record. Mr. Painter.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. So section 4, the typical revised program receipt language referencing the statute AS 3705-146B, is starting in section A, and then B is also a typical part of the RPL section. The parts that are unusual, and C is also part of that, is the typical language. The unusual parts are starting in section E, which contains a limitation on receipts, increasing receipt authority from the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation. That was an addition by the other body in its version, so this matches the version of the RPL language in the other body. And then E1 also lists the Coronavirus Relief Supplemental Appropriations, or CARISA Act, funds for the Department of Transportation as an exclusion. Section 2 on the next page lists the Coronavirus State and Local Fiscal Recovery Funds from the American Rescue Plan, which are flexible funds as well, so those are not included in the RPL section. And then item 3 also adds future infrastructure bills or jobs plans that may be appropriated by Congress but have not yet been, and B is future economic recovery or COVID-19 relief bills passed by Congress. C adds, again, natural gas pipeline expenditures as a limitation. And F clarifies that this section does not nullify any previous RPLs made in January.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Painter, am I correct that while this section is a reflection of legislative prerogative over federal dollars, we, as it stands, could not appropriate from this essentially, unless it happened the next 48 hours until the 2nd of August, and therefore dollars might arrive, I just want to understand that, the dollars might arrive to the Treasury unspent until the 2nd of August.
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, they could also be appropriated during the special session that begins on Thursday, so we have 32 days, and then August, I suppose.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please continue.
All right, again for the record, Tally Teal, staff to Representative Merrick. I think we've covered section 4, so we will go on to section 5, which is on page 34 of the bill. This is standard language that was left out of the capital budget last year in the hurry to get out of here due to COVID, so we've included it this year. Section 6 is also standard language having to do with the NPRA impact grants. Section 7 through 10, so which are on pages 34 through 36, all have to do with reappropriations from agencies to the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Section 11, I think I started to touch on there, was an operating budget item that was pulled out and put in the capital budget. It was more appropriate to include it here than in the operating budget. Sections 12 through 14, so pages 37 through 42, return to those reappropriations from agencies to the Alaska Capital Income Fund. Sections 15 through 23, so pages 42 through 46, are reappropriations within districts. So the capital budget co-chair's offices were able to work with individual legislators to identify grants through the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development that were potentially lapsing funds that could be reappropriated within a specific legislator's district. So those are all contained, broken down by district there in sections 15 through 23. Sections 24 through 26 on page 46 deal with lapse and lapse language and effective dates. And that is the CS for HB 70.
Thank you, Ms. Teal. Is there anything on document number 4 that needs to be highlighted?
I'm sorry, Madam Co-Chair, you're right. I should have mentioned report number 4, which is included to show that all of the reappropriations, those within district reappropriations that are included here, match the language that also appears in the Senate CS that was introduced earlier today.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the Chair, Mr. Painter. Spreadsheet from your office, number 1 for today, shows a UGF spend in this bill of $324.6 million. My question is, what does that do to what we were calling the residual amount that left us in a surplus, notwithstanding the fact that we hadn't funded the dividend? In other words, We had sort of a surplus of a similar number. It was $300+ million. What does this spend do to our surplus? So I'm asking about the overall.
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, so this body's operating budget alone included some fund changes using ARPA dollars that subsequently have not been found to be allowable in the for revenue replacement on debt service. So those numbers that we were using at the time assumed some fund changes that could not actually occur with the guidance. So obviously those numbers are not necessarily what could happen going forward, but assuming that same amount of revenue replacement was applied to other areas, I believe the leftover amount after a capital budget was about the amount needed for a 300 for a $500 dividend. That was assuming a capital budget closer to the governor's number. This is $160 million higher, so there would be that much left, or $150 million roughly higher. So it'd be that much less. However, again, because of the kind of moving target of how those ARPA dollars could be spent, it's difficult to compare this body's budget to the surplus at this point.
And again, it's important to remember that there were unique funding sources used originally. And so when we reversed those, that inflated our number. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Along that same line, so what you're saying is that obviously the Senate versus the House version is $155 million higher. And House to Governors is $200 million higher. And the ARP money that we first thought we had in the House, what they were using in the House budget, was $200 million higher. This doesn't take into account the Senate operating budget. And since we don't know what the delta is there, we don't really know the full sort of residual yet. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, I think I'm not prepared to speak about a fiscal summary on the fly. I would need to I need to prepare that for this committee if you would like to see that.
You can do a lot, but Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Painter, you spoke about the new recently released ARPA guidelines. I understand that they were quite long. I guess the question is for Madam Co-Chair. Are we going to kind of get a summary of how those new guidelines change things for us? Is that going to happen here soon, or do we know the answer to that question yet? Do we know now under those guidelines how things have changed for us in relationship to the budgeting process?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, we have some ideas of, I think we have a better idea, and I believe on Thursday in this committee there will be a hearing with Mr. Steininger. Will walk through some of the changes, I believe, Thursday, correct? So that will happen this week in this committee.
We will look forward to it. Okay, seeing nothing further, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing none, version G of House Bill 70 is adopted as our working document. And for now, we will set House Bill 70 aside. Thank you, Ms. Teel, Mr. Steininger, and Mr. Painter for being with us. This includes our agenda for this afternoon. Our next meeting is Tuesday, May 18th at 9 a.m. We will consider House Bill 104, Motor Fuel Tax, and HJR 1, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund, POMV, Earnings. With that, and nothing to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 4:40 p.m. Thank you.